It's me. Ooh-wee. It's me. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along.
Ow. What did you say, nigga?
Motherfuckers, what's poppin'? It's Thursday night. You haven't purchased any rice milk. Your underwears are still stained. You ain't got a motherfucking cell phone in the house, but you got internet connection, and you're listening to us live on SkidRowStudios.com. If you happen to have your neighbor's phone and you want to call in, it's 800-893-9562. Yeah, man, we got a dope-ass show tonight. To my left is my main man, Simon Kaufman. Oh, by the way, I'm Nestor Rodriguez, and I am your host.
Yo, that is Nestor Rodriguez. So if you got a pen and paper, write that down so you don't forget, fuck faces, because we're bringing it to you live again on a Thursday night. This is Simon Kaufman bringing it to you. Booyah.
Because I'm going to be forgetting my name. So write it down. Write this shit down because I may be calling you. And then next on the mic, mic three, is Rich C. What's up, bro?
What's up, everybody? Good to see you and hear you and feel you through the radio waves, 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 waves.
Yes, and to your left is back again, my man Wynn Walter, singular, not plural. Like,
yes, sir. Glad to be back. Thank you for having me.
I was calling you Wynn Walters last week.
No,
right?
S.
Because there's got to be two of them, man. Shit.
Only one.
Yes. And to your left, it's Aaron. Is Aaron Valencia?
That's it. Thank you very much for having me.
You got it. What's popping?
That's it, dude. Just here, seeing what's going on. See what you guys got happening.
Doing the thing. Yeah, so tonight we were talking about last week about the history of barbering and all that stuff, and then we touched in a little bit on your nonprofit, Los Angeles Children's Project.
Yes,
and
sir.
And the website and the raffle that you're going on, and Aaron is the mix master hooking up the hot rod that's going to be raffled off, which I'm going to buy a couple of fucking tickets because I saw that shit.
Yeah, you know,
I might as well get a fucking chance, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it would be great seeing you pulled up to the studios and that thing,
dude,
man.
Dude, that'd be ridiculous. So we're going to get into that shit. But before we proceed with the serious shit, we were just driving down 7th Street, right? And fuckface to my lefty is Simon Kaufman, who's from Seattle, Washington. He wants to make a left on red.
No. Let me take over from here.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm driving down the street. We're on a one-way street, okay? Right. For any of you with your pens open, get a piece of paper, start jotting this down.
Just draw the diagram.
Draw the diagram. We're coming down the left, and we're coming down the street. I make a left from a one-way onto a one-way. He's like, yo, what are you doing? Yo.
You didn't make the left. You were about to.
I was about to make a left. He's like, yo, it's a red light. What are you doing? I'm like, I'm making a left. You can't do that. And I'm like,
all of a sudden he's Italian.
And then fucko number two, he says, yo, I'm going to Google that shit.
I got Google for brains, and then I started to chant this in the backseat. A left turn against a red light can only be made from a one-way street onto a one-way street.
Okay.
Butt in.
So, boom.
And that is from the California Driver's Handbook.
This is not a law straight across all the states. This is fucking backward-ass California.
Most states?
You can't do that shit in New York.
You know why? You can't even make a right turn. You can't even make a freeway. Do you know why in New York? Because you got so much pedestrian traffic. You guys look like tribal refugees running through the Sahara.
But here's the difference.
So
here's the difference between pedestrians from New York and pedestrians from L.A., right? Pedestrians in L.A. walk in the street like they fucking have their head up their ass, like they're looking at clouds and shit like that.
They came from a yoga class.
Pedestrians in New York, they fucking cross the street like they got somewhere to go. And they make it happen. They go, and then you don't have to worry about somebody hitting your ass.
I get it. In New York, you're employed. You have somewhere to be.
Well, there might be a crack spot that's got a new fucking rock classification.
You purchased a smoothie with some wheatgrass, and you're taking your stroll. You're in your yoga pants. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
It's all about the cops making money in New York. That's why there's like no laws like that, because they want whatever's in your pocket.
California does.
It's all about the payola, man.
Well, right on red is not legal in every state. New Jersey, I believe.
You're allowed to.
I believe in Jersey you can make a right on red.
I mean, the reason you're not to in New York is because, think about it, you're in Manhattan, right?
Right.
You got, I mean, how much people are walking by? You can't make the right. You know, like in L.A., you come up to a red. If nothing, no one's there, you go.
Don't get me wrong. If there's a red light and there's no one fucking anywhere near me and it's like 1 a.m, fuck it. What am I waiting for? Like, who am I waiting for here? Especially if I'm downtown and I got somewhere to go, fuck it. I may make it happen.
No cops, you know? No stops.
Right. If my wife's in the car, she'll go buck wild on me, right? But now I'm going to whip that law. I mean, that was news to me. Seriously. I mean, one day we were driving and there's two lanes. It's a two-way street. Two lanes on each side, right? Let's say the left lane, motherfucker stops. Right, stops right in the middle, right, to make a left into a driveway going over a double solid yellow line. I'm like, what the fuck is this guy doing? Rich comes up and he goes, that's legal.
No, it's
not. It's not legal. No, it isn't.
You can make a 90-degree turn over a double yellow line.
No,
now,
can't.
If it's a double double yellow line, that
go fuck yourself.
That acts like an island.
You cannot anywhere in the fucking United
let's
States.
Have a segment.
Dude, cross
I
googled a double
that
yellow line.
You can cross. You can cross a double yellow into an alley or into a business. It's into something like that. Because I had to go to traffic school. I'm okay. One of those fucking
okay.
assholes.
Yeah, I went to traffic school.
Maybe that's what he was talking about. Into an alley or into business. But you can't just
into
fucking
a driveway.
Decide. Okay. So here's the problem.
New segment for next week. Trivia. Like, you know,
trivia.
Well, here's the problem. Here's the
downtown
problem.
LA traffic trivia.
Here's the problem trivia. I'm having here. Here's the problem. So you make a right turn, and right after you make that right turn, there's an asshole stopped because he wants to make a left into a fucking driveway, and he's got to stop because there's oncoming traffic on the other side. So that's dangerous. That's more dangerous than
just
whatever.
Just driving is dangerous, man.
Yeah, okay.
You freak out over everything. What you need to do is some deep breathing exercises. Go get, you know.
You're in L.A. Do some yoga, bro. You're in L.A. Yeah. Do some yoga.
Do some yoga.
Simon will spot you.
Do some Kegels.
I breathe.
Get a wheatgrass smoothie. You'll be fine.
You'll be good.
I take some wheatgrass shots occasionally, but when it comes to driving does get me fucking stressed out in L.A., only because it's a little fucking... People don't drive here. I'm sorry. They don't drive. They fucking... They're on another... I mean, don't get me wrong. Some people drive. Some people...
You get stressed out pushing your cart in the supermarket.
No,
what
hold
are you
on.
Talking
hold
about?
On. You're a car guy,
you
right?
You can't make a left turn
so
on
would
aisle
you,
three.
Would I be correct in saying that driving is going from point A to point B in the fastest, most efficient way possible?
Of course.
Okay. When you're in L.A., that seems to be the antithesis of what goes on.
Yeah, well,
okay?
Sometimes you got to...
I know, because it's always warm here. You got mini skirts over here. You got tight tops
that's
over
what
there.
I'm
why
saying.
You,
that's
why
not
you
driving.
Fast?
Sometimes
why
you
got to
drive with your knees.
Why
you
got
to smoke your pipe.
Yeah.
You
got to
smoke your weed pipe.
Yeah.
Either thing you got to do.
So you got to pack a bowl in your fucking driveway, okay?
I've driven all over this country, and I got to tell you something. I think the drivers in L.A. are the best.
You do?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, all right.
Wow.
That's cool.
They're not.
New Yorkers are a little bit better than L.A., but I hear what you're saying.
Los Angeles? No. Hold on. New Yorkers are not better.
They're stressed out.
No, no, no. New York drivers are fucking frantic, but they put it this way.
Stressed.
Give me an example. New Yorkers make asshole moves, but they make them happen.
They make them happen.
So here's the deal. You're in the far right lane. You decided, oh, shit. I should have made a left turn there, right? So you decide, I'm fucking doing it because I got to go on that left lane. You make it happen. Here's the difference from New York and L.A. New York will make this shit happen, get a couple of horns tooted at you. L.A., motherfucker, he'll realize that he fucked up. He needs to make a left turn, but he'll stop. And he'll crawl. And he'll fucking piss every fucking lane as he's making the left turn, causing 25...
He'll roll down the window and ask everybody, can I just get through here?
He'll cause a 25-minute fucking car, like pileup of fucking...
What cracks me up is, like, Nestor's talking about what the laws are, and in New York, they make up their own.
Yeah, they make up the laws.
Yeah, there's no laws in New York. They just, like... this is my law.
Driving in New
York... That's how I'm going
to
drive.
Because I used to be a New York driver. Out in New York... They know how to make use of the entire road. Traffic jam. Now the sidewalk's a road, right? You know, traffic jam.
Okay, put it this way. California ranks in the top 5th percentile of the most hit and run accidents in the United States of America.
You know why?
No insurance. Well, I have a couple of theories on it. No insurance is one of them. Yes. Uh-huh. So a lot of these guys don't have insurance. They don't want to stop.
Right.
The second thing is that Los Angeles, by default, is not a pedestrian society. So, for instance, cars are driving. You're thinking you're driving. All of a sudden, there's an imaginary crosswalk that pops out of nowhere in the middle of the street. The only way you'll know that it's a crosswalk is because some asshole decides to walk onto the street, right? And he walks on, and he's walking slowly, like he's going to pick fucking daisies, right? So the dude in the front's got to stop really fast, and then everybody else who's been fucking looking at clouds winds up short-stopping. Very dangerous. The dude in the front happens to be smelling roses, too. Accident, right? In New York, a motherfucker give you quick eye contact, be like, yeah, knuckle, I'm walking across the street. And he crosses the street. But there's eye contact. Motherfucker don't just walk on the fucking street and decide I have the right of way. Doo-doo-doo, you got to stop. You know what I mean? That's my other theory on it. Anyway.
Right, moving right along.
Hey, moving right along. I'll just say one more thing about driving. When I first came out to L.A., by the way, I love L.A. I just want to come off like I'm a fucking angry New Yorker that hates L.A. I love L.A. L.A. is like one of the most amazing places to live, and I'm grateful that I live here. The sun is out. I love the people. You know what I mean? But with the traffic thing, I was telling Rich today that when I came out here, you know, I drive to fucking Long Beach. I live in the Valley, right? I drive to Long Beach for a fucking shrimp kebab. I'd be like, fuck it. Let's go to Long Beach, you know what I mean? Now, I don't even want to get the fuck out of my house to go shopping in Gelson's. I'm like, driving? Fuck that. I'm not driving. I'll walk somewhere, you know? Anyway, that's all right. That's the deal.
We're helping the homeless.
So, Aaron, let's talk about you, Aaron.
All right, let's talk about me.
So, what's the name of your hot rod company? First of all, you live up in...
I stay in Lancaster, California. Lancaster, Palmdale, out on the desert area. High desert.
Stay in Lancaster. Were you ever in jail?
A couple times.
I was going to say,
in and out.
People in jail, they you don't say, where do you live? They'll go, I stay. Where do you live? I live on Park Avenue and 96th Street, right? Yo, Pablo, where you live? Yo, I stay at 132nd Avenue. Like, you ain't going to be in one place for too long.
It's one of those things, man. You just get caught. It's like, where you from, man?
I got you. I stay over here. That's what I'm saying. I got it. The other one that I love is I caught a case. Yeah. Motherfucker, you catch herpes. You don't catch a case. Okay? You committed a crime and you got caught. You don't catch a case. You know what I mean? My boy's like, yo, man, I caught a bad one. What you mean? I caught a case, man. You catch the flu. You don't catch a case. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, back. That's one of my jokes. I've never had an opportunity to use it live. You know what I mean? So, okay. So tell me the name of your hot rod.
My hot rod shop, fabrication shop, is Hellbound Hot Rods.
Hellbound Hot Rods.
Yes, sir.
And you just do cars.
Just cars. We do some classic bikes, but for the most part, it's cars. Vintage cars, 30s, 40s, some 50s cars.
What makes a car a hot rod?
Hot rods, well, you got customs, fenders. Which are more, yeah, fenders. You got the bigger customs, the 50s cars, fenders, and the hot rods typically. Some of them still have fenders, but they're the smaller cars. They fit more in like the late 20s, 30s era. It's a more smaller car, open engine, open fenders.
So it's the body style makes it a hot rod.
Pretty much. It's kind of like, I compare like... customs, which are your bigger cars, your chop tops and all that, to hot rods. Hot rods is kind of like a motorcycle. You can't help it. Like, you have to go fast everywhere you go. Like a motorcycle, you have to haul ass everywhere you go. Customs.
Or at least sound like you're going fast.
Yeah, no, you just got to haul ass. It's loud. It's aggressive. Yes. The horns pop out. Yes. You know, it's
the horn shit pops.
Yeah, so you make some, they're pretty muscle cars. They got some pop to them?
Yeah, some of them. I got a guy in my shop. He does the engine side. He's more into speed. He races out at Bonneville. He does that. Me, my thing, I'm more into style. Slow, low. I'm not into land speed records. I just want to get there and look cool as hell.
You just want to chill. Right.
Yeah, that's it.
You're like the type of dude I don't want in front of me.
Yeah.
In your heart. I do want you beside me.
I do want you beside me, though.
I want to see your car. Uh-huh. I love looking at that shit. Uh-huh. I love it. That's art. That's art on wheels.
That's it. You know, it's all style. That's how I look at it. It's all style.
Love it.
What are you driving now?
Actually, right now I've sold everything, keeping the shop going, getting this charity going, getting all this stuff.
So you make these cars and then you rock them and then you sell them.
When I first started off, it was when eBay was first kicking.
Oh fuck!
Yeah, that was when we built
That's your old car. That's you.
Yeah, that's I built that one for Wynn.
No,
yeah,
I saw this one. Yeah. I saw your car.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sexy. So tell me about this car. What? That's 40?
That's a, what, 51?
51.
50. Oh, hold on. This is, okay, 1951.
51 Chevy Fleetline Custom.
Chevy Fleetline. Okay, so what'd you do to that car?
We lowered it. We chopped the roof. We slammed it. The front fenders are a 1954 Cadillac.
Yes.
Custom skirts.
Yeah, custom handmade skirts. Section the rear fenders. Yeah.
Yo, hold it up to the
camera. I just did.
The dashboard is out of a 46 Ford. The grill is a 50 DeSoto. It's 10 different cars in one there.
So I love that. Okay. Okay.
That's cool. It's all style.
So how did you get into this? Was this something you've always done? Were you mechanically inclined?
It's funny, man. I didn't grow up around cars. Didn't grow up nothing to do with any of this. I didn't know how to change a spark plug. And I actually met this dude. I was going to get tattooed by this dude called Baby Ray at a Spotlight Tattoo in Hollywood. And I was sitting there, nice. And he's a big, rough dude. And he's like, hey, man, you see my sled outside? I'm like, what the fuck is a sled, bro? And
there's no snow in LA. He takes me outside and
shows me his car. And it's a 54 Chevy chop top airbag slammed on the ground. And my jaw hit the floor. I was like, what the fuck is this? I don't know what it is, but I gotta be a part of this. What is? I couldn't sleep. He gave me a ride around Hollywood that night, just mob around Melrose Boulevard, and I couldn't sleep for a week. I was like, I want to know everything there is to know about this. Like,
how old were you when that happened?
Man, I was like 20.
20.
Yeah, about 20 years old. And from that point on, it was like just stealing the information. I didn't have, didn't grow up around it, So it was just like looking at books, started hearing about car shows, going to car shows, just looking at stuff like, oh, fuck, man, I think I can do that. And
So 20 years old. Mm-hmm. At what point did you start like making that happen for you as, straight up manufacturing cars? You own this company that you're working at, right?
Yeah.
Tell me the name again.
It's Hellbound Hot Rods.
Hellbound. Okay. So, 20 years old. How long after that? Let's say 5 years?
It was probably when I quit my job. I had a regular job. I was a union painter, painting buildings in downtown, doing all that stuff, and still coming home at night, working on cars in the garage, and I started selling them on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
And probably about maybe 24, 25.
So 4 years after that, you had already started fucking around with cars.
I started just doing it in my garage, and I messed up my back at work, so I was like, man, I just goofing in the garage on disability, and then, just goofing around, and then disability ran out, and I just kept going. I was like, I'm not going to go back to work, man. I don't want to do the commute. I don't want to do that. Like, I just stay at home, do this. And I loved it. Mm-hmm. Never went back.
Mm-hmm.
Never went back to work.
Is eBay still one of your main?
No, not at all. eBay killed it. In the beginning, I would build them up myself. Had a little bit of money. I'd build them up myself. Drive them around for a while. My style, the way I wanted them. Put them on eBay, sell them. People were going crazy for them. And after a while, people were like, man, I saw the car you did. Can you maybe do a little work on mine? And at first I was like, nah, I don't want to work on nobody's nothing. I don't want to fuck with that shit.
You just want to do your own cars, my thing.
I don't want to deal with
them and then sell them.
Exactly. It's good life. You always got a new car. Always got a new car. And it's just one thing. It just kept going. It was like a puppy mill,
Do you paint them also?
Yeah, we do everything.
Jesus.
Do everything. I maybe commitment issues or some shit. I don't know. I build them up and be tired of them, sell them, build another one. And people started coming at me.
You could look at it as a commitment issue, but you could look at it as, you have varied tastes.
I was always striving for something better. It was like I'd finish it, and I was like, man, I learned a lot on that one. That was cool. But it's like I want to do one of these cars.
Yeah.
I want to do a lowrider. I want to do a '60s lowrider.
Yeah.
Crazy paint. I want to do the whole bit.
Yeah. I'm gonna use that one, honey. I wasn't cheating on you. I just have varied taste.
Well, Wink's car is fucking delicious.
It's delicious.
When I look at those cars, they're like candy, man.
It's fucking sexy.
And when I saw your car, I'm like, are you going to put some like ghost flames on that shit? You were like, nah, I don't know about that, whatever. But I mean, I do have, I watch Counting Cars all the time. I love cars. I don't know a hell of a lot about all these different cars, but I do know that I want to get me a Lincoln Continental 1964 suicide door and do something with it.
There you go.
But that's a sexy fucking car in and of itself. But then those hot rods that you be rocking, the Cadillac front on Wynn's car just makes it look
like a
character in and
of itself. That's the thing is the whole thing with doing the customs is trying to make a car that looks like it came from the factory, but no one's ever seen it before.
Right.
That's beautiful. You're taking recognizable parts from other cars, modifying them, cutting them up and molding them into one car. And it's like, people are like, man, I've seen that part, but it doesn't go with that.
Is that a Cadillac?
Yeah, they're like, what the fuck is this?
Or is that a Buick?
Without it looking like a Frankenstein.
You know what I'm saying?
So everything, it's like when me and Aaron got together, that was just such a great thing because it's like, I was like, I want this.
How'd you meet Aaron? Oh, because you know he did Hot Rods.
A good friend of Robert Atkinson, right? Robert Atkinson, pretty famous tattoo artist, mm-hmm, okay? Mm-hmm. He was a friend of mine and a friend of Aaron's, mm-hmm, and I was like, I just had a really bad experience with a car builder, and I pulled my car. I said, you know, this guy's just don't know what the shit he's
doing.
You guys know
Barris, right?
Drove, of course. Yeah.
That dude did what you're talking about. He would take cars, modify them, put different body parts.
It was two brothers. His brother did a lot of the work.
Sam Barris was the man.
Yes. Yes.
So what happened? Okay, is Robert put us together. I get a hold of Aaron. Aaron comes down. I tell him my story. He sees the car. I go, dude, I was just like, had it. Let's just get it done. That's where my attitude was.
He was like, I just want it painted and driving. That was it. Yeah. Didn't even want all the crazy shit. And we got together and it was just, we started shooting ideas. And was like, fuck, is that possible? Can we do that? What about this?
Let's
try.
Yeah. With the Cadillac fenders, I come in. It was a crack up. I come into the shop one day. And it's like we're looking at the car, and I'm going, you know, Aaron, if there was just one motherfucking thing that we can change, okay?
Yeah.
Right? It would be those front fenders, man, because those headlights, because everybody always does the same thing. It's either we tunnel them or we French them, okay? Or we put some round bar on them or we make them 54s or blah, blah, blah. I go, but nobody ever does anything different. And I'm like, we're looking, and he's just like sitting there, and I'm like going, I don't know. And I look over, and he's got a Cadillac shop. And I go, that would be cool. And Aaron happened to have a tape measure in his hand.
and it was the right width.
We're both leaning down on one knee, and Aaron looks over at the Cadillac, and he goes, And he goes over and he measures it. And he measures the Chevy.
Yep.
And he goes, There's no reason why we can't do it.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So I'm leaving. I'm taking my kid to Hawaii the next week. Okay? Like in 3 days or something. Mm-hmm. Right? I go, man, that would be so cool. And I call up this guy, this friend of mine, Steve, okay, who's my picker. And this guy's like amazing. I go, Steve.
When you say picker, what do you mean?
He finds parts for us.
Got it.
Okay, right? I call up Steve. I go, Steve, I need Cadillac. He goes, Cadillac? I don't do Cadillac. I do Chevy, man.
Chevy,
okay,
Bobby.
Right? Exactly. He goes, I don't know nothing about no Cadillac, man.
Right.
Okay, right? And I'm going, okay, whatever. Right? He calls me back in exactly 10, was it 10 minutes?
That was fucking right away.
Okay. He calls me back in 10 minutes. He goes, I got your front bumpers, man. Just come pick them up.
He's Latino?
Yeah, right here in
of
East
course.
L.A.
Of course.
Okay.
Chevy.
Okay. So do you only do classic cars, or would you, if someone brought in like a newer car, would you be able to?
I don't mess with it. I drive my 99 F-150 pickup truck, my work truck, and I open the hood and it's just like, there's computers and vacuum and shit everywhere. Yeah. I don't even fuck with it. I don't even work on my own shit.
Yeah.
I only know old
that
cars.
That was the demise of fucking the automobile. Car
with all the fuel injection and all this stuff. They knew what they were doing. Now you have to only go to the dealership.
It's simplifying. Same thing with all my customers. I try and push them into the simplest way possible. Man.
I bought a car one time and I'm like looking all over. I'm like, how do I check my transmission fluid? So I call them up and they're like, well, you can't. What do you mean you can't? What, I have to find out after it's too late?
Yeah.
You know, we'll just bring it to us. Oh, man, don't even get me started. It used to be you could go and work on a car. You can't.
No, you got to have computers to work on a car.
I lost my keys. $185.
Yeah, it's
you know
no
why? Because you're the only motherfucker that does it. That's why. Yeah. If I could, there's no competition for a fucking key.
You know, the thing with custom cars, two customs and hot rods, you want to keep them as simple as possible. You know, it's like you look through these magazines, man, and you're like drooling, like, I want one of these, and I want one of those, and I want one of these things and those things, right? And then you put them on, and they break, okay, right? And you simplify it as much as possible, man, and you got that tradition, and you got everything going for it, and it's just like so simple and so nice. That's what you want.
So, okay, so I want to move more towards your nonprofit and how you got into that whole thing, because I mean we could talk for hours here.
Oh yeah, I know. It always does.
And your car. I love cars. And you know, maybe down the line you'll come back and we'll talk more about them cars. You know, after I win that raffle,
Hey, bro, all you gotta do is buy 2,500 tickets. It's guaranteed. It's yours.
I'm gonna buy a few.
It's real easy, man.
Trust me. I'm gonna increase my. I'm gonna buy at least At least four, okay? I'm going to buy at least four.
All right, gang.
Because I believe in luck, right?
Right. Come on. Four is a good number, man.
Four is a good number because if I was going to buy, you know, 2,500 of them.
But I got to tell you,
five is even better, though.
But Nestor, I got to tell you, five or six is a lot better than four.
Let me see. Because if I'm going to buy like 2,500, I'd be like, yo, Aaron, let me go to your shop and let's talk possibilities of different, you know, hot rods and variations that I can
whenever
do.
You're ready,
you
brother.
See what
whenever
I'm saying?
You're ready.
So you got into that. You started building hot rods. You obviously opened up your own business and it became pretty successful, yeah?
No, we're doing okay.
Okay, meaning what? Like you rock a hot rod
We survive. I got two employees. I make sure they got enough money to go home and feed their families.
That's pretty good.
I got enough money to go surfing on the weekends and do my thing. I don't need much to survive. I don't fall into
clock.
No, man. I try and live a simple life. Yeah. You know, I'm not trying to
wheatgrass smoothies and shit.
Yeah, every now and again, whatever. Yeah. I dabble. Greed will kill you. So my thing is keeping customers happy. I have fun doing what I do. And people come back, man. And I'm not trying to get rich off every job.
I hear you, brother.
That's it.
Having too much sometimes, and you know, this is a perfect example. Having too much sometimes is too much,
if that
makes sense. You know, the more one has, you know, I'm a homeowner now. I came from fucking the projects, all right, in New York City. A fucking Puerto Rican kid with a fucking mortgage payment, insurance payment. You know what I'm saying? It's like it becomes a hell of a lot more than you really need, right? Mm-hmm. I'm in my backyard. What do I really need, right?
Simplicity is bliss, man.
Right. Yeah. So, and then we talk about like the people who don't have anything, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about homeless, homeless people. But you guys, your nonprofit deals with kids solely, yeah? So tell me about that. Tell me about how Los Angeles Children's Project came about.
I was a homeless kid.
Okay.
I was a drug addict kid. I was strung out, all that stuff. I was a runaway, a dropout, kicked out at a young age, living in squatter pads, all that stuff. Just trying to go to school. It wasn't happening. Got clean and sober, 99, went to rehab, got myself in rehab, fighting court cases, all that good stuff.
Right.
And I've been clean and sober since. And for a long time, it was just work, trying to live a decent life. And probably about maybe almost 4 years ago, I started realizing, you know, I just wasn't happy.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, I was trying to figure out what it was that would make me happy. And I kind of put two and two together that giving back is like, man, that worked for me. It, like giving back, helping other people, like that just, it was a whole nother high, a whole nother feeling of like fulfillment. I was happy, you know? So I started volunteering at the homeless shelter out there by me in Lancaster, Grace Resource Center. And,
hold on a second, I'm sorry. Hold on a second. That's just me.
Are you trying to tune me out? Was
no, 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 no. What it is that you said happy.
Were you taking a hit?
And I was reading an article about the top 10 unhappy cities in the country.
Uh-huh.
And I'll just say quickly, New York is number one.
Unhappy?
That's because they can't fucking drive.
Number one.
They
can't make left turns on red.
The number one happy, and we'll go back to your happy, the number one happiest place is Charlottesville, Virginia. Okay, and then
that's because they don't know any better.
That's because they don't have to turn left or right on red; they walk right. And I just want to say, Lafayette, Louisiana; Baton Rouge, Louisiana; Shreveport, Bossier City, Louisiana; and Houma, Louisiana, are four Louisiana cities that are in the top 10 happiest places.
Where's LA? Where's LA?
LA is nowhere near there.
LA didn't make the list.
No. LA isn't even in the top 10 unhappy cities. You know what
well,
I'm saying?
Thank God. All right, man. But New York is.
No, Vegas is in there, and so is Buffalo, New York. But if you ever
I used
been
to live
to,
in Buffalo.
Well, if you, you know
yeah,
Buffalo.
Yeah, yeah.
Buffalo's a very underpoverished.
Yeah, I used to live in Buffalo. I used to live in Rochester.
Yeah, you know about Rochester. Yeah. Beautiful places.
I used to live in downtown Rochester. It was not that beautiful.
No, that was horrible. Buffalo is beautiful. The mansions and everything, but industry left there, and it's all fucked up. Downtown Rochester, it's like downtown. But Rochester itself
outside,
is nice.
Like East Rochester, outside the city, is beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful.
I went to Rochester. I was in a film festival in Rochester. I love the Little Theater there. I was young. Anyway. You were young.
Go ahead. On the way to Las Vegas, it's one of the happiest cities.
Yeah.
On the way back from Las Vegas, that's one of the top 10
on the other side of the freeway.
So, okay. So you were unhappy. Again, that's another subject that we can come in here and spend. Because happiness and unhappiness, you know, again, it's easier to be happy when you don't have a lot of stuff to deal with, right? Mm-hmm. But when you don't have anything, it's hard to be happy, right? Well, but I've known people who have very little, mm-hmm. just enough, and they're very happy.
I got a lot of stories on that one, man.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
There was a study that came out recently that what they said is that they found that from making no money, like poverty, up to $60,000, but was like $60,000 was like the cutoff point of most people's happiness. But they found that from like 60 to 120 to 400 to 500, happiness didn't increase. So they said like the people that make around $60,000.
Did herpes increase at that point?
Well, if you got 500,000 and you're going to.
All right.
What they're saying is typically in the United States, someone that makes $60,000, you don't have the stresses of homelessness, poverty, mm-hmm. how do I feed my kids, how do I educate my kids, how do I pay my mortgage. That doesn't cause happiness. But once they got basically from 60 beyond, like if
it became more happiness complicated.
The happiness did not increase.
Right.
Mm-hmm. People think, oh, I want to be a millionaire so I can be happy.
No.
The study found that roughly around $60,000 a year
is
enough
number.
To be comfortable, and you can live your life and you can do things.
That sounds about
and
right.
Doing mm-hmm. things
that sounds about right.
is 60, what makes you
if
happy.
If you do it smart and you're not striving to be that 120 at 60, which most people are, got these $3,000 a month
that's
mortgage.
Right.
Trying to live that 120 life.
Yeah. If you're living within that 60K and you have money to go surfing.
If you live within your means, you're happy.
If you live within your means. Say that again.
Live within your means.
That's the motherfucking, that's the message. Live within your means, you motherfucker. Popping bullshit, eating more cornflakes than you can handle. Live within your means. That's right, man. Okay.
To all you people that go to work, your work jobs, man.
You pay your bills. You don't get credit. Pay your bills, man. Get to work on time. Live within your means. That's what I'm talking about. That is one of the messages that we had on earlier episodes of Nestorius Public Radio. But that's exactly right. Being right-sized. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
Not too crazy, not too low. But, okay, so you weren't happy. So how did you make that jump from not being happy? You had found a passion for building hot rods. Mm-hmm. That's a passion. That's a love, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were being self-sufficient, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you go from that to deciding, helping homeless kids and, underprivileged kids, helping them is going to make me happy. How do you go from that to that?
I don't know. Honestly, it was just like going through every day and everything was fine. There wasn't anything drastic, but it was just I had almost like a mid-level depression. Just getting through life, you know, nothing.
I have
nothing
great.
I don't know if
talk to me about that.
I don't know if that's from being a recovering addict, from the way I've grown up, things that ramble through my head, whatever. But it's like everything's okay, everything's cool, but it's like
you're not happy.
Not that I'm miserable. You know, it's none of that. It's just like, man, it could be a little bit better, but it's like I should be doing something.
Something was missing.
Exactly. It's like nothing's wrong. Okay, nothing's wrong.
But not everything's right.
But nothing's wrong one bit. Okay, but there's just something not
there.
Right. And not even okay, there's a missing link. Yeah. Me and Aaron would like I'd come into the shop and like. Here's my car. Like last year, it was like almost being finished and everything. And I would come into the shop and it was like, Aaron would be like, well, we're almost there. We're almost there. We're almost there. It's like it's painted, like all this stuff. And I would be like looking at Aaron and go, you know what? Fuck this car.
Right.
Okay. Right. Yeah. I hate this car.
Yeah.
And I didn't.
Right.
Okay. And me and Aaron, what we were talking about is like, you know what? We got to go to Costa Rica and surf for the rest of our lives.
You both surf, right?
Mm. Yeah.
You both surf.
Okay, right? Mm. It's like, we got to get out of here. It's like, there was just something gone because, see, all I was thinking about was the car and getting it done.
Right.
And I was, like, all about that. And I was not putting others in front of myself.
I get it.
When nothing's wrong and you're still upset, it makes you even more sad because you know nothing's wrong. You see something on the news. You know, you walk by a homeless person. That's something wrong.
Dude,
there's nothing wrong.
I get it.
That feeds in. It becomes.
I get it. I get it. Trust me.
It's not like it's not.
What else is there? Right. What else is there?
It's almost like everybody has everyone has a purpose. I believe everyone has like whether it's a destiny, a purpose, or something.
Absolutely.
Something that you're supposed to do in life that just fulfills you. Whether it's you do it for a period of time. Then you move on to something else. Mm-hmm. But you got to find that and you got to fucking do it. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So it was like, it was honestly, it was the night before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. I didn't have much family. I had nowhere to really. Like I said, probably about 4 years ago, or 4 years ago.
Okay.
Nothing going on. It was like 5:59, right before 6 o'clock. And I call, I Google the fucking the homeless shelter out by me and I call them, got the last person as they're locking the door. It's like, hey, are you guys doing a meal tomorrow? You need some help? And they're like, yeah, you want to help? Be here at 9. Showed up the next day, and I didn't think about work. Because, you know, work's a struggle no matter what. I didn't think about work. Didn't think about the ex-old lady. Didn't think about the house. Didn't think about none of that shit. All I thought about was doing that. And it was like, man, I was stoked. It made me happy.
Right.
And I started coming back. Started coming back more and more.
That
and
moved
I was like,
you that first experience,
yeah,
though,
man.
Right?
I mean, I remember as a kid going through those lines, getting food. I remember when I was about 18 years old, you know, on the run and nothing to eat, coming down off dope. And there was a church that in my neighborhood that
you knew giving out
that,
meals.
That give out food. So it was like, I remember going in there and getting food. And it was like, you know, a little embarrassing, but it was like punk rock, whatever. I don't give a fuck.
Right.
You know, but it was like, so I remember that.
Punk rock.
Yeah,
that's punk rock. Fucking get a meal, eat my ass.
You know?
Yo, eat my ass, fuck all that shit. Hey, we got a song, man. We got an album. Fuck that shit, eat some food, eat my ass. Yo, you got a bass line, let's do it. All right.
No. Well, who better to go to a homeless kid nowadays and
than someone, who's
than
already
someone who, A, was homeless, B, is doing something cool that they can look up to. It's like, you know, like, if you were just punching a clock with a lunch pail, being some stiff, they might look at you and be like, fuck that, I don't want to do that. But you're doing something that people want to do, people think are cool. You could take them to the shop. You could show them the cars.
And that's I'm doing. That's what we do, and that's where I want to take this and progress this into in the next year, next couple of years, doing like an after-school program with kids, you know, with underprivileged kids from shitty neighborhoods. You know, they don't have much of a chance. Kids from the shelter don't have much of a chance. Everyone has a chance, but it's a little bit slimmer when your parents are on dope, drunks, hookers, whatever. So
they can
come to the shop, learn a little bit.
Everyone has a chance, but when you don't have the resources.
And when you grow up in that, when you grow up around that, you know, I grew up around some gnarly shit that sometimes you don't even realize that things like that are attainable. You know, so you're used to a certain way. You know right from wrong. You know all of this stuff, but you just, if that's all you see, you don't even think that's attainable.
That. Yeah.
And you see these rich kids on the weekends and you're just like, you just build animosity,
of course.
So,
of course.
And then that keeps you farther away from even ever.
In all
doing
reality,
anything.
It does.
But, you know? but I totally get all that, man.
Mm-hmm.
But something happened to you and you took that going to a food, delivery, not food delivery, but
a soup kitchen.
From going to a food, I've done that in New York. Same thing. Thanksgiving. My wife and I, we're not invited anywhere. We're not making a fucking turkey.
I wonder why. That's weird.
Well, I'm not. No. Here's the difference. Here's the difference. In LA, people have other people over to their houses, right?
Sure.
Unless you have a family, a big family, which I don't have kids.
Yeah.
It's a different story.
You know what I mean? Most people in New York don't even have a kitchen table, let alone you're
going to
have people
over.
Whatever
I'm saying, in L.A., believe me, when I first came out here, motherfuckers were inviting me to a Thanksgiving dinner, to this party, whatever.
Because you have a dining room. You don't have a dining room in New York.
But that's not the point. That's not the point. The point I'm making is that, you know, it was one of those Thanksgiving. I have a good job at the time, blah, blah. And
You got nothing else to do, so it's like, let's go do something
good. You feel like fucking giving something. My first experience, and I'm going to share it. My first experience was, for God's love, we delivers a food kitchen for homebound people with AIDS. Okay,
nice.
So you know, of course, there's a lot. I've never fucking delivered food to somebody who had AIDS, and it's in the projects here and there. My first delivery was a young black kid. The kid could not have been more than 8 years old. Okay.
That's some gut wrenching shit, man. You come across some stories, man, that'll kill you. They'll stick with you forever.
Yo, that fucked me up.
That's
dude.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah, no, that fucked me up. And it's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Anyway, so I relate. But there's one thing, it's one thing to do that, right?
Well,
and it's another thing to decide, okay, I'm gonna dedicate my life or some of my life to making this a little bit to making this a little bit more than just visiting a fucking soup kitchen once a week.
Commitment, brother.
Commitment. You know, so what I want to know is, so you were telling me outside that you actually have a soup kitchen for homeless kids as well, or
that one that I started volunteering at. I was there for probably about 6 months, and I was showing up all the time. You know, and I'm all tattooed and look gnarly and shit, so they didn't really know what to take. Didn't know how to deal with me, you know, at the beginning. They thought I was someone coming in for food. I'm like, no, I'm here to help and volunteer. Right. And they're like, just go sit down, sir. I'm like, no, man, I'm here to help, you know?
Right.
But,
Because,
you know, it's like a lot of these churchy
one of the
old ladies.
Homeless guys wants to help. Yeah, man, I'm confused.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, these churchy old ladies and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not no part of none of that. I'm not part of your church. I'm not part of none of that stuff. And
I'm here to volunteer,
I'm just here to help, man. Yeah. I was homeless. I'm here to try and get back. And it took a little while, but after a while, they were like, man, this dude's got some heart.
Right.
Dude pulled me in his office one day, and he's like, you know, I've seen you, I've been seeing you around here a lot, and we're going to need some help. I want to see if you want to do Sundays for me. I'm like, do what? He's like, I'm going to give you a key, give you an alarm code. I trust you. I've heard good things about you. I want you to come in. I need you to cover for some people. I was like, all right.
Sundays, and then that's it was when the strippers come.
It was, you know, it went from doing that, and I was there for about a year doing that, once a month doing that and filling in, and I started, I wanted to really do something more, something bigger than just doing a hot meal. So I started, I wanted to see and be a part of some real help. I started looking online, and long story short, I ended up going to Southeast Asia. I was gone for about 2 months doing volunteer work in Northern Thailand and then in Cambodia.
Mm.
And some of the stuff I saw out there, Thailand, they got some money, but I was helping teach English and do construction in a school and stuff way up in the jungle. And it was really cool, but I wasn't really feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
I traveled into all through Laos and traveled into Cambodia. Ended up in outside the capital of Cambodia, Phnom Penh, hooked up with this Australian small little grassroots deal. And what they're doing is working with like squatter villages on the outside that the government doesn't care about. Their people don't care about. There's no soup kitchens. There's none of that in Cambodia. And, you know, you want to talk about like how you said you went and, you know, this 8-year-old little kid with AIDS, you know, going to these small little squatter jungle villages. And these are villages that they're on a road in the middle of rice fields that they're like transients. The government come through and say, you guys got to go. And they try and pack up everything and move somewhere else. They're like squatters, no running water, no nothing like that. And we were delivering fresh water, some medical supply and picking the kids up on motorcycles in the morning, taking them back to the little school thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're playing with the kids and trying to boost morale and shit like that and hanging out. And, you know, it was crazy when the little kids had a little bowl of rice. And you're always joking with the kids, trying to get, like, attention out of them, trying to get them to open up. You know, and you're always like, oh, let me have some. You know, trying to act like you're going to steal their food or something like that. And the little girl looks at her food, looks at me, and she just raises up the bowl like, well, here, you can have some.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, fuck, man. I was just kidding. You know, like, it killed me. So here's someone who has nothing. Absolutely nothing.
And is willing to share.
And is totally down to share half their food. I was just like, that's where it's at.
Yeah.
You know, that's where it's at. And then I came back to the States. Went back to work doing all that stuff and started volunteering more and doing all that. And I want to do something more than just a hot meal. I felt like a hot meal is not really doing, it's helping, but it's momentary.
But you can do more.
Yeah, I felt like I have the means. And once it popped in my head, I have the means and I have the ability to do something bigger. And kids is where I was, you know, I know the struggles of being a kid that doesn't have shit, you know? So it's like, I can do something to benefit just the kids, not the adults, not the drunks, not the bums, not the hookers. You make those decisions every morning when you wake up to slam something in your arm or drink a bottle, do whatever. The kids, most of those hookers, crackheads, and bums got kids. And those are the kids that are getting left in foster care, getting left at shelters. Yeah. So it's like, you know what?
Cracks. No chance. Yeah.
Their chances are so slim. Yeah. Yeah. You know, they end up, I want to do something just for that.
Okay, so tell me how Lost Angels Children's Project started. Where did it start? How did it start? Where are you at now? What are you going to do?
Honestly, probably about 4 months ago, it popped in my head and I really started thinking about, I want to build a car.
Mm-hmm.
Build a car with all my friends, just gather parts from everybody, get sponsors, get donors. And this is the first time I've ever heard of anybody doing this. I've heard it in the bike world, but not in the car world.
Mm-hmm.
Build a car, raffle it off, give all the money to the children's charity, to the children's side of these two homeless shelters.
Two different homeless shelters that you're going to donate the money to.
I work for Grace Resource Center out in Lancaster.
Grace
Resource Center. And then I started getting involved with Union Rescue Mission in downtown LA, Skid Row, down on San Julian or San Pedro.
Yes.
Started getting involved with them and seeing the amazing work they do. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, this is awesome. So I couldn't no, I just want to help you and not you. So I was like, no, I'm splitting everything 50-50.
That's where the proceeds of the raffle to this hot rod are going to go to.
All proceeds are getting split down the middle
between
between Grace Resource Center and Union Rescue Mission of downtown LA. And it's just for the children's side of both of these homeless shelters.
Now, to the all the penny-pinching motherfuckers, it's tax-deductible, right?
It's tax-deductible.
There you go. There's another incentive, you penny-pinching motherfuckers.
Everything is run through 501c3.
It's all good. Okay.
Everybody
wins. Okay. Tell me about this car you're building.
All right, so I'm building...
How much money are you trying to raise?
How much
are the tickets? Where can I buy a ticket?
It's a Model A Roadster, which is a 1931 Roadster. It's a convertible on a 1932 frame, which was kind of the style of the times. Small block Chevy, just real business. Got a lot of old school parts on it, some new stuff, but really fitting the style. A gloss, like deep emerald green pearl
paint
with a white pearl accents.
It's on your website. I saw that.
Yeah, it looks. I've been working on the thing all day. Looks real big white wall tires. Looks real nice. And then I'm trying to do is raise $50,000 to split between these two charities.
60. Well, shoot for 60. And
Aaron,
like 50.
Aaron goes 50. I'm still saying 60,
honestly,
baby.
In the very beginning, I'm coming up with this idea, and I'm just like, fuck, is this even a possibility? And I've been talking with Wynn a lot, just about life stuff in general. You know, when I call Wynn, I'm like, dude, this is what I think I want to do, bro. And Wynn's like, he paused for a second. He's like, I'm in. Let's fucking do this. Whatever we got to do, let's
do it. He's gonna rock that shit one haircut at a time, one shave at a time.
No, I mean, in all honesty, Wynn has been like super integral to this actually going down.
I know. I met Wynn 2 weeks ago, and I was like, "Yo, we'll have you on the show." You know, Wynn. I got Wynn another spot here on Monday, August 25th on the Qumran Report. Well, yeah, both of y'all.
You're right.
Nice. We'll show the progression.
I got to tell you something. Trust me, it ain't about me. I feel very grateful that Aaron brought this up, because as soon as he said this to me, because I was in the same place Aaron was. You don't seem to understand. Like, Aaron talked about that low-level depression. I was in the same exact spot, you know. And as soon as he said this to me, I knew that for the rest of my life, this is my mission, okay, is to do this and to help these kids.
I mean, it's doable.
And when I say it's my passion. Everything is doable.
Everything is doable.
Why not?
It's doable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me give you, you were going to say something, Aaron.
Oh, yeah. It was just, you know, I guess the goal of this whole thing, you know, I'm really hoping to keep this going and be able to do this every year and get more and more people involved. And, you know, I mentioned before is, you know, that, obviously, to raise money, to help these kids, give them a better future, hopefully. If we can do that a small part, whether it does help or doesn't. But it's like, for me, I think on a greater scale is if by people see what we're doing here, they might be inspired to do something on their own. To me, that's where it's at. Because I've been inspired by other people. Mm. They didn't even know that they inspired me to do what I want to do. But it's like, man, if we can inspire other people, I think that's where it's at. It's real easy to get caught up in greed and the government and wait for the government to fix stuff. It's not going to happen. Yeah. We got to do it. Not to sound like a crazy hippie, but it's like...
None of that stuff matters anyway.
We got to make the difference. We have to make the difference.
What matters is, look, you're not going to cure fucking people throwing shit on the street, right? Like
garbage. We're not going to fix homelessness. It's still going to happen.
I'm not even talking homeless. I'm giving you an example. You're not going to get clean the streets, right? Mm-hmm. But what you could do is you can throw your trash in the proper receptacle.
Exactly.
You can just do your part, whatever your part is. Once you start worried about what other people are doing, it becomes a sudden thing. What you're doing is very honorable. You know what I mean?
Earl Nightingale said, if you want to clean up the world, start by sweeping your own porch.
Absolutely.
And I fucking sweep my porch all the time.
And there's a Jewish saying that if you save one life, it's as if you save the entire world. Because if, let's say, 100 kids come through that shelter, but you get one of them to stop the cycle, get a normal family, get a job.
That's what I'm talking about right there. That's it, dude.
Who are going to have kids. If you get one kid to stop the cycle, you're affecting generations of future humans.
Oy vey.
Here, let me give you some statistics, because I did a little research last week. We could have a three-hour show, but an estimated 200,000 youth under the age of 18 and thousands more ages 18 to 24 experience some type of homelessness every year in California, according to the California Homeless Youth Project. The Los Angeles Housing Authority found close to 9,000 homeless youth this year. That's 2014. And recent reports show that homelessness has increased by about 12% among transition age youth, meaning 18 to 24-year-olds. You're talking about the foster care system. Mm-hmm. 18 is the...
Yeah, when they're cut off.
That's when mm-hmm. they're transitioned out. And it's a weird fucking place because, okay, so now the foster mm-hmm. care system, you're not, you can't be in there anymore, mm-hmm. but yet, what do you do? Where yeah. do you go, right?
Yeah. 18 so, nowadays isn't like 18-year-olds in the 60s who...
So transition age youth seem to consistently slip through the cracks. Many of these youth in LA are only a step away from being homeless because of their family situations. Last May, 9 major agencies that work with homeless youth launched the Los Angeles Coalition to End Youth Homelessness in an attempt to bring multiple aspects of youth homelessness, such as the Child Welfare Institute, Corporation for Supportive Housing, LA Gay and Lesbian Center, and Children's Hospital Los Angeles to the same table. So here's the other deal with this whole thing that I was reading mm-hmm. is that so there are all these organizations, right, that have money to help aging out kids, let's mm-hmm. say from 18 to 24, right? But none of them communicate with each other. They can't, right? Let's say you're an agent.
So crazy. Doesn't make sense.
Well,
no,
because
right?
there's not one database. There's not one database. Yeah. So let's say Aaron Valencia, you've been in a foster care home. You've been in many, right? Mm. But in the last year or two, towards the age of 18, you're in this particular foster care. You're aging out now. So these other fucking agencies that could easily make the transitioning out period a lot easier, in other words, get you health care, get you job training, get you this, but they're all different agencies. So they're not, since they're not communicating with each other, it's so it's this one, another aspect of this thing. It's like, fuck. But there are a lot of agencies trying to come together mm-hmm. and help the situation out, which is part of what you're trying to do. You're not going to cure homelessness. You're not going to cure child homelessness. But you're raising $60,000, 30 for, you mm-hmm. know, one...
Make an impact. That's what the whole thing's about, is make an impact.
So August 30th at the Ventura Nationals Hot Rod...
Ventura Nationals Car Show in Ventura County at the Ventura County Fairgrounds.
August 30th. August 30th. What time to what time?
Let people in at 6.
What
6
time
to
8. Is the raffle?
I'm not sure. You know, sure. Middle
and
of
do
the
you
day.
Have to be there to win?
You do not have to be there to win. We made it that way, but we're making it so you have to claim the prize within like 3 days.
Just let me give you my email address. It's Nestorius at yahoo.com. If you're a winning ticket, just give me an email. I'll pick the car up for you and I'll drop it off. Don't worry about it.
You can check out, we have the Instagram, the Facebook. The Instagram is Los Angeles Children's Project, the underscore in between each word, however that works. Okay. And the Facebook like page, Los Angeles Children's Project.
Same
and
thing.
Then
underscore, just together.
Just the word on the on all the right. Facebook. All and right. then the website, you can go and visit and kind of check out a couple more photos and get a little more info.
LostAngelsChildrensProject.com, yep. which we've been plugging. So like Lost Angels Children's Project on Facebook, mm-hmm. and then follow them on Twitter at Lost Angels Children's Project. .com.
You'll find it.
Oh yeah, whatever. Like the Facebook page. Yeah. Anyway, but August 30th is literally right around the corner.
So I'm stressing
How are we buying tickets though? How are we going to buy these tickets?
We're just setting it up for the different locations. Angelo's Barbershop in
Angelo's,
downtown.
You can buy tickets at Angelo's downtown.
Cash, credit card, PayPal, what's the deal?
Cash. Okay.
Cash on right. Angelo's.
Or you can we just got Trey Snore sunglasses involved.
Okay.
Ventura National Hot...
Can I buy tickets on LostAngelsChildrensProject.com?
No, not on the website. We're not doing tickets online. That's the one thing we're staying away from because it's a giveaway.
Yeah.
It's a giveaway. So we're not doing tickets online, but everything is in person. But there's different... if you follow us, we're going to be posting soon, probably the next week, where people can go in Orange County, in downtown LA, in San Fernando Valley, in Ventura, where they can go to these certain vendors and buy tickets at different stores. They're going to carry them for us.
Okay.
Plus, there'll be runners. Plus, the day of the show. Okay. Get out. Go check out the show. If you've never been to a custom
Ventura
car show.
National.
You've never been. You're going to have it's an amazing
August
time. It's crazy shit you've never seen before.
Cast and crew screening of my wife and I's film, Silver Skies. So
what time is it?
That's at 11 a.m. But I'd like to go. Yeah.
There's great hotels there, man.
No, dude. I just drive up. We're going to be in Westwood anyway.
You'll have a great time. Bands, food. I mean, crazy cars. Yeah,
but all the information now is on LosAngelsChildrensProject.com
yep.
or on your Facebook page, LosAngelsChildrensProject.com.
You can check out the progress build, everything.
Okay. So we really need to get on where the tickets can be purchased. That's a really important thing.
No, of course.
We're going to keep that updated.
Keep coming back to check for updates. Yeah. You know, check for updates, build updates, and availability for tickets and all of that stuff. Just stay, just follow us and stay tuned.
Yeah, because we definitely got to get those tickets sold. Unfortunately, you motherfuckers in New York, you'd have to come down to L.A. to buy tickets. Or you can email me at Nestorius@yahoo.com and I'll buy some tickets for you. You know what That's I'm saying? It. Check there us out on Facebook, Nestorius Public Radio. Follow us on Twitter, at NestoriusNYC. And, you know, tell your friends, subscribe on iTunes, and, you know, come back. Check it out.
Talking shit, so y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way.